This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Audioblocks.com. Stop overpaying for audio media that's underwhelming. Audioblocks is an affordable subscription-based site that gives you unlimited downloads to over 100,000 stock sounds, sound effects, loops, production music, and more. Get your 7-day free trial at audioblocks.com/promo/whatthetech.
What the Tech?
Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by a returning Paul Tharod. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Back in the States. You're no longer in Lyon.
Again.
How's the adjustment for you? Like, you were away for like almost a month, and now you're like, oh, I'm back in my office.
Yep. It's very natural to be here. No, the weird thing is funny. I was just talking to Mary Jo and Leo about this yesterday, and actually it happened to me this morning at about 4 a.m., which is you wake up in the middle of the night like that, and you think you're in another bed somewhere else, you know?
Yeah. That's every day for me. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. So it's disconcerting. And in this case, like I didn't do this last night, and I hopefully won't, but – I actually, two or three years ago or something, jumped out of the bed, walked toward where the bathroom would be in the other place, which is the opposite direction from my house, and then like walked into my dresser and then kind of stood there in the dark, like looking around, thinking like, what am I doing? So This is that kind of weird, you know.
But I mean, you're glad that you're back home and things are starting to go back to normal, right? Because you missed, the whole, you know, I don't know if you had internet where you were, but Windows 7 happened.
Yes.
Windows 10 happened, sorry.
Yeah.
Windows 7 is happening. And,
we had a great time and I'm glad we went to Lyon, and the house that we swapped with was great. Those people were really nice. I mean, if I could do this all over again.
They were very upset at me.
Oh, I should tell you, actually, since we're on that topic, he actually did leave out some of my Def Leppard CDs.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which were buried in a box in the cellar.
So for people who don't remember, last week, Paul was at the house share, the house swap that you were doing. And you were in this beautiful room filled with, just thousands of records.
Yeah.
Every kind of record. And I told Paul to just take all of them, just misplace all of them, just like randomly take them out, put them all over. I guess the person who that belongs to was listening, and he tweeted me, and he told me that he's going to take your Def Leppard CD albums and just scatter them around, which he did. That's awesome. That's really awesome.
Yeah. No, I would never. I mean,
I would
never mess with his stuff, obviously. So that was nice. But, you know, the timing of this was so awful, and – you know, I wanted to get the book out before I left and wasn't able to. I figured, well, I'll be able to get it out while I'm there, and wasn't able to. And it was just very stressful from sort of a work perspective. And
even though you're there, right? Like, even though you still have internet and you're connected, it almost feels like you're missing something by not being
so
in your regular chair.
There's been a we've been doing this for a long time, right? So we have established a schedule, and it's kind of always worked out for the most part. And I before I left, you know, I'm with new people now, a new company and everything. So I wrote everyone and said, look, you guys probably don't understand what this is like, but I mean, I'm not going on vacation. I'll be working every day. I'm going to be off schedule because I'm 6 hours ahead. And I don't know if it's just the general thing with Windows 10 happening, or my kids are just getting older, and so they're less inclined to do things on a certain schedule or whatever, but we really didn't keep to the schedule that I have always, or for the most part, kept to. And the other thing is, you know, the last 2 years, I actually took a week off. Like I keep trying to having to explain to people, you know, this trip's not a vacation. I can't be gone for 3 weeks and do nothing. And so I'm just living in a different home. We do stuff every day, but I typically work. And then, you know, the last 2 years I've taken about a week off, not quite a week. But,
I mean,
you know,
do you treat it like, you know, just like if you were at home, you'd be doing, you know, whatever you're doing till like 6 o'clock. And then after six, you go out to dinner or whatever, you know, or like the
except because of the time change, it's a different schedule. So I would get up in the morning, do, a couple hours work, catch up on email, write a couple of quick things, whatever. Head out by late morning at the latest. And be back by 3 o'clock because 3 o'clock in France is 9 a.m. in the United States from in Boston. And that was always a really neat schedule. And it really just didn't work out. I mean, my son, who is 17 now, if we let him, and we did a couple of times, he could sleep until noon.
Yeah.
You know, and so because he's a teenager and that's, you know, that's kind of what they need. And I don't want to be a jerk about it, but not, you know, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, it's like, you know, you're kind of cutting into my day now, you know. And the other thing is, you know, my kids are old enough that they can stay home. And so in a place like Lyon, where maybe there aren't – Lyon is a beautiful city, but it's a beautiful city for adults mostly.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not like Paris where there are, you know, 2,000 different sites and, you know, crazy things to do. You know, maybe every other day we could leave the kids home and my wife and I would just go out for a couple hours, have lunch out or something, go out by ourselves. And that's fine. It's just – but it was weird that it just kind of turned into kind of a different thing. And I was – you know, just stress from the just the window stuff. It was just too much, you know.
It's too much.
And
I couldn't take it.
No, I mean, I really wish.
No, it has to be overwhelming for you because, I mean, this is what you do, right?
I can't disappear when a new version of Windows comes out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, hey, Windows 10's here. See you later, guys. You know, like it doesn't make – I can't.
Or that was strategic and you're like, oh, hell with this thing. I don't want to deal with the backlash of this.
No.
You guys
if I had
later.
Known, by the way, if I had known July 29th was the date, we would not have gone away when we did. I would have changed it. We wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
And it was October. It was always going to be October. They changed it very late in the game. We had bought our tickets at great expense, by the way, the most expensive plane tickets we've ever purchased. You know, the other family had purchased their tickets, of course, and that's their schedule. We can't change that. And, you know, we had to go. So we did. But, man, if I could do that one over again.
You would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would.
Well,
I'd go now.
Yeah, right now would be a great time. We have so much to talk about. We didn't get a chance last week to talk about Google and the restructuring there. They've announced a router, which we should talk about. Before we do, I want to talk about our sponsor. It's a new sponsor to the show. We spoke about them once before, and I got a lot of positive feedback from podcasters, out of all people, podcasters and media creators online. You know, when you put something up on YouTube nowadays, it's not like how it was a couple of years ago where you can put up anything and everything and just hope for the best and it doesn't get tagged as a copyright violation. Well, nowadays, everything is tagged as a copyright violation. I got tagged, Paul, for putting my own personal video and I had the TV on in the background. The TV,
nice.
I think it was CNN or the news was on and I got tagged by a copyright. Now, I had to pull my video down in Canada.
But what does that mean, though? Tagged by YouTube? Tagged by...
It said, you know, so-and-so claimed that there's copywritten content on your video. So it's automated. You know, they listen back to it, and they hear something that was submitted.
Yep.
And that's it. That's all it is. And what am I going to say? Like, you know, you dispute it. People are getting tagged for bird sounds outside. I mean, it's crazy sometimes how this works. But if you're a podcaster...
Yeah, the birds in my neighborhood would do that.
Yeah, the ones in Boston.
Those bastards.
Those birds. But if you're a podcast creator or content creator, look into this website, audioblocks.com/promo/whatthetech. You get a 7-day free trial with this. And the way that this works, you don't have to overpay for audio that exists, you know, copyright free, fair use audio. Audioblocks is an affordable subscription based site that gives you unlimited downloads to over 100,000 stock sounds, sound effects, loops, production music, and more. Even with sound effects, for example, the Ball Truth, the intro that was produced for them by an engineer at Westwood One, used the safest of the safest audio clips. And 10 years, you know, he's been using it. Just last year, every one of our videos got hit with a copyright tag for a sound effect, not even anything. It's a sound effect that says, from Los Angeles. So you have to play it safe nowadays. With audioblocks.com, you're playing it safe because it's fair use. It's unrestricted usage for personal and commercial projects. Keep what you have, keep what you download, and maintain usage rights forever. so you never have to worry about something like this happening. Audioblocks.com/promo/whatthetech. I'm talking about podcasting today, but it's for generally for anything. If you are creating a home video and you need, you know, some sort of sound effects that you want to be able to use, if you're creating content, video reviews, product reviews, again, podcast, video, audio, check them out. Audioblocks.com/promo/whatthetech. I really enjoy talking about this because I deal with issues like this on a regular basis. And, you know, the one-time podcaster may not experience it, but I know many, many people that listen to the show that are dedicated hardcore podcasters and some big deal podcasters out there. I'm going to pat myself on the back that these guys are listening to me and I appreciate it, but you should check these guys out because you don't want episodes getting pulled. You lose money when you do that. It becomes a hassle for you. You don't want the strike. So audioblocks.com/promo/whatthetech. You get a 7-day free trial when you sign up. I want to thank them for supporting, of course, What the Tech and, of course, the GFQ Network. I'm going to pat myself on the back on that live read, Paul.
It was nicely done, sir.
Thank you. You know what it is when you've experienced it and you're passionate about a problem like this.
Yep.
Because it drives me crazy. I mean, I just had stuff. It was a home video that got pulled. Copyright. Sorry, CNN.
Sorry, I watch you.
Yeah, you're crappy news organization. You know what? That is my punishment for having them on all day. That's what happens. Let's talk about Google. Major restructuring happening at Google. The parent company is now called Alphabet. What do you think of the name, Paul?
I think it's terrible. I think it's stupid. So stupid.
Yeah. Really. By the way, before I forget, I apologize for cutting you, Paul. Starting next week, drum roll, please, we will have an ad-free stream. I know people go crazy with the ads that we have on Ustream. We have no control over those. That's what the company puts. We're going with an ad-free model for the live stream. And it's going to be provided by live stream, actually. I got this fun little box here. Where is it? This little thing right here is going to control the ad-free stream. So starting next week, no more ads to interrupt my ads. You'll just have one at a time.
Just me.
Just me, guys. I know a lot of the live viewers are going to be happy over that. So the name is a little stupid. It almost sounds like it's like, listen, this is what we're going to do. We're going to buy every company to fit a letter. And no matter how
except that they already have multiple companies with the same letter.
They do. So are they going to rename?
No. I don't think the point is to have 26 different companies.
But why now? I mean, it is interesting, though, because Google, I mean, and for all fairness, Google is just a property of theirs at this point. They have Android, which is a Google property. But
you know what? Yeah.
Is this them securing their future where, you know, the Google model, Google is their browser, is their, you know, web page, and their ad model is coming through there. That's how they generate a lot of their income. Is this their way of saying, listen, Google is just going to become a small part of our business and it's going to be all these things?
Well, I mean, first of all, Google is still going to be 99% of their business, right? I mean, the interesting thing about this is that, well, actually, it's not even as simple. Google is such a weird and quirky company, right? That this kind of, if any other company had done this, it would have made zero sense. When Google does it, like, well, okay, they're weird, right? And I think a lot of this is part of what I think of as the cult of the co-founders, right? Sergey and Sergey Brin and Larry Page. So they're quirky guys and they're interested in different things, like really different things. They're interested in spaceships and flying cars and self-driving cars, and they're interested in the human genome and, you know, whatever. And like, they're like big thinkers. And I think the day-to-day stuff at Google is not of much interest to them. In fact, I think the whole way they did their, you know, their IPO, the way they created their initial corporate structure, the way they've redone it here, has all been based in this notion of these guys not wanting to do things the normal kind of traditional standard,
way, right? Yeah.
Not interested. And it's going to be a sad day for Google in some ways when these guys leave. And technically, they just did.
Yeah.
which I actually think is what this is about.
I mean, is
that
this...
if Larry Page and Sergey Brin had stepped down from Google, it would have destroyed the stock, at least temporarily. It would have been a huge problem. But I think by doing it this way, You get to keep these guys associated with the company, which now has a different name, even though they're really off doing other things. The guy who's running Google now is the right guy to run Google, and Google now being that part of Google that we collectively, people who are on this podcast or listening to this podcast, care about, you know, the technology part for the most part, although oddly some of it is still separate.
Okay, so can I do a comparison to Microsoft here? Is Alphabet equal to Microsoft and Google's equivalent to Windows? It's just a property of theirs.
Yeah, right. So, yes.
That generates a lot of money, obviously, you know.
Yeah, the difference is that Microsoft is one company that has business units, and Google is now a holding – no, Alphabet is now a holding company that has multiple companies.
Companies, yeah.
And so I think there's a part of this is a desire to appease to shareholders and to investors who the Google founders, from what I can tell, could not care less about, but have legal requirements too, where they can separate themselves from Google without actually leaving the company. They can put the right people in place to run each of the companies, which already makes plenty of sense. You know, the guy who owned or ran Nest runs Nest. You know, the guy who should be running Google is running Google, et cetera. And the Google is no longer weighed down by these other smaller companies that are never going to make any money, even though the profits from Google are still going to be used to prop them up.
So,
but this gives, I think, will give those investors the transparency they want so that they can feel good about Google as an ongoing enterprise.
So, you know, obviously this is future-proofing the company in a weird way, but what's going to be considered a Google property and what's going to be considered a independent company? Like, for example, YouTube. Is YouTube going to be considered under the Alphabet holding brand, or is it still going to be Google?
No, I think it's still part of Google.
It's still part of Google. Because the ads are being generated via Google.
I don't have a 100% firm grasp on what's where. Some of the obvious stuff is all together. You know, Gmail and Chrome and all that stuff, Android, it's all together. It's all technology stuff.
Yeah.
But it's also all together with the ads, which, you know, is technology stuff, but not really. But the ads obviously play a big part in the other stuff that they do, including Yahoo. I believe, I could be wrong here, but I believe that the Nexus hardware stuff still falls under Google.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
But Nest doesn't. And it seemed like when they bought Nest that one of the things they would do would integrate these things together and have them be part of a cohesive family of products. But no, I guess one of the deals with Nest is sort of like Skype at Microsoft was that they have their own unique culture. They have their own unique way of doing things. They never switched over to any kind of Google infrastructure. They're still basically operated as a standalone company. So they get to go off and be their own thing. I mean,
there's a lot of companies like Nest is a known one, right? Like that Nest is something that we know, but there's a ton of companies that Google has acquired that we don't really know of. You know, they just, they bought this company and that company and we don't know what's going to happen to them.
Right. Right.
I mean, they bought Grand Central a couple years ago.
Well,
they
turned into Google Voice. Yeah. Which by the way, now is, you know, they have these efforts that are, you know, technology related, like Google Fiber, Google Wi-Fi. Is that the right term for it? Google Fi, I guess. The Wi-Fi service. And that in some ways supersedes Google Voice, right? Because a lot, you know, it's a phone service. And I guess if you have a Google Voice going into Fi, that's a little bit of a problem. And so there's a lot of stuff to sort of rectify, and it's not very clear where things are going to fall.
By the way, Google Voice no longer works with my phone. Since going to my Samsung, it doesn't work at all. I can't get it to use the voicemails on its own. I have to do some crazy finagling of getting it to work. But it is interesting that this is the new company now. You know, Alphabet will be the holding company, and all these other companies are going to trickle down. And I the way that I see this is that they are trying to protect themselves for the day that Google ads do not generate the revenue that they are generating now.
Well,
because if your main business starts falling apart, no matter how successful your secondary and third and fourth business plan is.
Yeah. So that hasn't happened.
And it won't happen. It won't happen for a long time. If
I don't know. So actually, I do find it interesting that Google has exactly the same problem as Microsoft, which is that as people move to using mobile devices more and more and PCs less, the way that they make money is disappearing because they're not successful in mobile in the sense that the way they make money is from ads, and mobile ads are not successful for them. So this is going to require some restructuring on their part. And it's interesting because this is a chance for someone to come along and disrupt this. If Apple or some other company figures out how to monetize, of course, Apple has figured out how to monetize mobile devices. So that's a ludicrous statement, but you know, it figures out some kind of a replacement for mobile apps, like, or mobile ads. You know, Google could be sunk in that sense.
No, I mean,
in the same way that if the world changes to tablets and smartphones, Windows could be sunk.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's a changing world, and it's at least it's a positive to see that they're trying to adapt and they're trying to guess what the next step is. I mean, they have all these crazy projects like Project Loon and you know, all these things. Yeah, like all these crazy.
But that stuff shouldn't be attached to Google, right?
It shouldn't. No, I mean, they're electric cars. They have
a search engine company, a Gmail company, you know, an Android company, whatever.
20 years ago, Paul, if someone told you that Alta Vista was going to get into the car business, what would that mean to you?
You know what, though? So there are things that are equally weird. I mean, there were toy companies like Mattel and Coleco that got into the video game console market in the 1980s. Imagine if those things had – and then they made computers. The computers never sold well, but imagine if they had. Imagine if – the number one, you know, the number one and two selling computer today was like a Coleco something and a Mattel something. Like, how weird that would be. But what was the origin of a company like Sony or a company like Nintendo? They weren't technology companies when they came of age in the early 1900s. I'm not sure of the exact history of each. But, you know, to those people of that day, if you had said, by the way, 100 years from now, you're going to be a leading technology firm and selling semiconductor-based, you know, products around. They'd be, you know, they wouldn't even know what you were talking about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, things change. You know, Sony sells. Actually, one of Sony's most profitable businesses is a life insurance company that exists only in Asia.
Yeah, you know? And that's amazing. I mean,
it's weird.
Really weird. So Sony's like a holding company, also.
Samsung sells washing machines, you know, and refrigerators
and dishwashers and.
Yeah, and I'm sure they have confusing UIs and are terrible to use. But
Mitsubishi makes cars and TVs.
That's right, yeah.
And did they still make TVs? And heavy duty. I worked for a Japanese company for a while, and this company made staplers. And they made, like, really expensive construction equipment.
Sure.
And staplers.
Yeah.
So you would have, like, and it was, and it
it's
wasn't
kind of the
separate.
Same thing. It's just a different scale.
Yeah, but they didn't even try to separate the business.
Oh, I see.
It was like you would have a catalog, and then, like, people would call, and, like, you would either take orders for heavy-duty rebarring tools. Yeah, like rebarring equipment, or, like, a box,
and,
like,
and
a dozen
staple refills.
Yeah. Like a staple refills. But the value in the company is that they had, like, some patent on the mechanism of how the stapler goes. It was, like, this super smooth. It was like the Cadillac of staplers.
Right.
And that was their big thing. And then heavy duty construction equipment, which is insane. So, I mean, but look at Google, right? They're a search engine. They are a phone company. Now they're making routers.
Well, I mean,
talking about the router, what do you think of this?
In some ways, this is not much different than guy becomes rich somehow, maybe in technology, like Mark Cuban or Paul Allen. And then they own a sports team, right? And now these guys are kind of famous, especially Mark Cuban, out in the normal world. And nobody who knows who Mark Cuban is, for the most part, understands where he came from. They just think of him as the guy who's on TV or the guy who owns the Dallas Mavericks, when in fact he came from the technology startup world and just cashed in and made a lot of money. And I get, you know, companies can do this too, I guess, you know, when you have enough money. I mean, Apple is a company that is almost literally been proven to be working on driverless cars. I think a lot of people would, you know, it's not hard to look at Apple and say, wow, I'd like to see their design sensibilities applied to whatever.
Yeah.
Home appliances, automobiles, airplanes, boats. Although the Steve Jobs one was terrible, by the way, or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting how technology has kind of become the driving force rather than it being, you know, like a GE, for example, General Electric, right? How many properties does GE hold?
Right.
I mean,
actually, GE is probably the most obvious comparison to the new.
And now, you know, it's a very different world we're in. This One Hub got announced. On Hub got announced yesterday or the day before. Yeah. And it's funny because I was just talking to Spencer about routers. So he bought a new house, and he's having a lot of Wi-Fi issues in the house, where some areas are dead spots and some are you know, not. So he's like, I just need something I could just plug in and it works. Like, it'll know that there's like a Wi-Fi signal.
You
want
to like extend it maybe, or
yeah, he just wants to extend it. So I was looking at, like, there is some like easy one button extension stuff, but I don't really know like Wi-Fi that way.
Wireless,
like,
networking is actually really difficult.
It
I mean,
is.
If plugging in a router or having a router, having it give Wi-Fi to the house, is actually not too hard. But when you run into situations like what you're talking about, that gets really tricky. I used to use, you know, Apple has like the big routers, but then they have the little portable routers.
Yeah,
I actually used to use one of those to extend the wireless network through my house. It worked, but man, what a pain in the ass it was to configure. Yeah. And I think you had to initially plug it in with a wire, you know, kind of bring it over to the part of the house where it was going to be. I forget how. It was very difficult, and it was the type of thing, if someone unplugged it, you were like, you're never going to get this going again.
It's like when you have to disconnect the battery in your car and all your presets are gone.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly what it was like.
Yeah, it's lost.
Like, can't we create like a little tiny battery in this thing so it retains it for like, I don't know, like the 20 minutes? So OnHub got announced, and this is a weird device. It's kind of competing with Amazon, because it's going to have Google Now integration. It's competing with Apple, with their Apple routers that they're making.
Yep.
You ordered it, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I did. And I don't need it, you know. But I sort of recognize the need for this kind of thing. You know, for example, here's a story for you. God, this is so dumb. When we were in France, right? The first thing we had wanted to do was get online there, right? And so what they had was an older Netgear router with a WEP password, which is a combination of letters and numbers. I want to say it was 20 digits. They had written it down on a piece of paper, the password. Now, WEP is an older form of wireless security that's insecure. I mean, anything could break into it. It's like the simplest hack in the world. And we had a really hard time. Of course, they're French, so they write differently. So, like, the nines look like G's. It wasn't clear if some of the letters were capital or, you know. We spent a long time
trying to
get just any device for this to work. So, I had my kids typing it into different devices. I was, you know, my wife and I were saying it out loud so they could get it quickly. We couldn't get it. And so, I walked over to the router, and sure enough, it's like the default thing. It's written on the router. And so we could see where they had made, you know, they didn't make a mistake. We just couldn't read the writing.
Yeah.
But we figured out how to get into it. And then I thought, you know, this is goofy. I think the router was old enough that it had like device limits on it. So the first couple got on fine, but then other devices couldn't get online. And then someone would get online and it would bump someone else off. And so I thought, I need to look at this. So we actually spent a lot of time on this while we were there. And I went into their router. By the way, I shouldn't say this on the thing. Let's just say that the default username and password were the username and password, right? So, which is really insecure. So it's like WEP, all the password information you need to get into the network is written on the router. And so I was like, okay, first of all, I'm going to fix the security in this WPA2. I'm going to fix it so that all the devices can go in and configure like access. We're going to do static IPs on devices that can't get on because there were still some. It was really weird. And I'm going to change the name of the – and while I'm doing all this, I'll just change the name of the network. And I took pictures of everything, and I was going to change it all back, and I was going to leave them a note and say, by the way, you need to fix this because this is not secure.
Yeah.
I completely forgot to do it. And so we're sitting on the plane literally
– Oh, no.
Taxiing, and I was like – And Stephanie's like, what's the matter? And I said, I forgot to change their stuff back. And so she wrote them an email quickly. And I hope hopefully what they'll do is leave the security where it is and change the name of the network and the password, whatever. The point of the story, sorry it was so long, is that this stuff is really difficult, even for someone like me, because with my own stuff, you set it up and then you stop thinking about it.
Yeah, you leave it. Yeah.
And confronted by this problem, it really requires like a full stop. It's like your whole world grinds to a halt while you think about this stuff. So when I saw this Google thing, it was very interesting because it was announced just as we got home from this thing, and I was thinking a lot about this wireless networking stuff. And I thought, you know, this is the type of thing like that family should have, that family being just normal people, right? And that's why I think this is interesting. Microsoft tried to do this, by the way, 10 years ago, made beautiful products, two generations of them, and then gave up.
Which product was it?
So there was a series of products. So what they had was wireless access points, and then they had wireless cards and adapters for PCs and for laptops. Because if you think back 10 years ago...
Oh, yeah, this is like 10 years ago. Yeah, you're right.
People didn't have wireless capabilities a lot of the time. And so I think the first gen was like 802.11b. It was probably web-based. I don't remember now off the top of my head. And then the second gen was G, right? And they made beautiful hardware. It was super simple to set up, really nicely done. Great job. And I, you know, their excuse at the end of the day, you know, after two generations, 2 years of this, was like, you know what, this stuff is starting to become more common in PCs now, and it's getting easier. You know, obviously, D-Link routers were a big deal for a long time, and other companies have routers that are pretty, you know, fairly easy to use. But the router we have is fine. It's fairly modern. Yeah, I don't think it's ACN. It's probably just N or something. You know, it's. It's fine. It works great. The range is great. Yeah. If you can go to the far corner of my house, you can go outside for a ways and still get Wi-Fi access. But this kind of thing is super. I'm sorry, I'm babbling. But
no, please.
This type of thing is super necessary.
I mean, look at this. This thing looks awesome, though. I mean, the fact that you could log in your phone and it tells you how many devices are connected. You could kind of set, keep an eye on your network. It's doing all the analytics. You could check the network through the app, control it from anywhere. It's a real pain in the butt, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I think it's gotten worse for a lot of people, considering everybody's now doing Netflix streaming and Hulu streaming and all, you know, just apps on these devices.
Right. And you can prioritize.
Number one. But number two, like, most people don't have multiple routers set up in their house.
No.
Most normal people have one router. It's probably in their office.
Yeah, they don't have wired Ethernet all over the house.
Nothing is wired.
They get whatever they get from their cable company. They get the piece of crap router that they give you.
And that's all they're doing.
It's configured by the guy in the overalls, and then you never touch it again.
And then you hook up a TV upstairs with Hulu, and you're like, I can't watch this thing. It looks like crap.
Right.
So for a lot of people, this is a major problem right now. Like, the way that I've done it is insane. I have all these Fios routers, and I've set up Mocha bridges, which is like a coax bridge. Each of the IPs are like 192.168.2.1, 192.168.3. You know, like, they all have their own assignment that connects to one network. But the problem with doing this is that Verizon doesn't want you to do this.
No.
So they want you to actually do it a certain different way. So if on their new boxes, their new gateway boxes, they call them, if you shut it off and turn it back on, you lose internet on everything. So the only way to regain internet is to disconnect all of the other ones and then power them on one by one. That's a little nuts.
Yeah.
Most people are not going to do that. They're going to either try to get some crappy wireless access point and hope for the best, or they're going to be insane and they're going to run Ethernet cables up and down their house, which I don't know too many people doing that nowadays. But it is interesting that a lot of people have not prioritized in making this easier.
Yeah, and I just think that there's a lot of stuff going on here that, again, you know, people listening to this like whatever, what's the difference? That I think is actually really a big deal. But there's also some future-leaning stuff that I think is very interesting, right? That it's going to work with these smart devices. It has the protocols built into it to control things like Nest devices or things that are like Nest devices. And I think that's going to be kind of a big deal for people.
Yeah,
down the road as well, and you know, we'll see. I'm not suggesting that we all need to buy this thing. I mean, you've seen like that weird, like the D-Link thing looks like a Predator drone, like it rises up out of the steam or something, and it's gonna shoot missiles at you. I'm sure the thing gets awesome range, and you know, whatever. It's got like antennas all over the place. It's crazy looking, but I think this kind of thing that's kind of emits a soft light. It doesn't have blinking, flashing, you know, baloney going on. It's something you could put with furniture or next to a lamp that no one would really think much about. I'm not 100% a fan of the, you have to have a mobile app to configure something. I hope there's still like a web interface, but I think that's a friendly approach for people because people have phones and it's going to work with iOS devices. It's going to work with Android devices. And I think that's cool. And
see, you know what I would love to do? I get, you know, people come here all the time and
They're like, oh, what's your Wi-Fi password? So I got to sit there and like say it to them, right? Like I would love to get like a little Bing on my phone once they connect, and then I could just do approve always or approve just for the day or whatever, you know, time frame I want to do it, and you set them up like that.
Right.
Why isn't everybody doing this? Well, now I guess everybody will have to, right?
I think that, well, you know, this is a lot like Google Fiber, but it's on a really small scale. That hopefully what this will do is inspire the D-Links and whoever, you know, Netgears of the world to just make things simpler, you know? I know that these companies probably all have little initiatives for this kind of stuff, but I don't know. I still find this stuff very, very confusing. I spent a lot of time on this in France. I mean, we had, you know, we had moments. They had a 25 megabit connection, which is great, right? We talked about how the uplink was only one, which is terrible, but that's, you know, that's nobody's fault. It's what a lot of ISPs do.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, as a TV, we're kind of hanging out watching TV one night. I hooked the kids on Arrested Development, which I'm really proud of, and they love it.
Great show.
And we watched a couple of episodes of that, and then it was Sunday night, and we tried to watch it. And the first one, it barely started, and then we tried to get to the next episode, and it wouldn't run. It just wouldn't connect, you know, because Netflix, you know, it's like Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. It's like, it's a freaking disaster. And that's not France's fault. It's not, you know, the router's fault or whatever, but it might be interesting if you could. It's probably Netflix's fault, really, so maybe there's nothing you can do about it on our end. But, you know, it's kind of interesting if you could dedicate bandwidth. In other words, you say, like, Netflix is a priority, you know, like
always.
On Saturday night.
Yeah.
And see if that makes a difference.
Forget about the BitTorrent client.
Yes.
By the way, guys, I'm hearing from the chat room, you could do this in Windows 10. You could actually just approve that, you know, connections and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm talking about my phone, you know, like in a real world, like I got relatives over and they all want to connect to my internet. I just want to be able to just look at my phone and click OK.
My wife came up to me while we were in France and said, I just want to get a book on my Kindle. What do I have to do? She couldn't figure it out. She couldn't get it connected, you know. That's just normal person, normal need, you know, shouldn't be a problem. And it was just kind of a goofy, crappy router from, you know, 10 years ago or 8 years ago, however old it was.
Was it a Linksys WRT54G?
No. It wasn't one of the classics. No, it was like an old Netgear thing.
It's interesting. I think a lot of the hoopla with these devices has kind of settled because every internet provider now is supplying you with a router.
But most of them are crappy.
And they're
like
crappy.
The FiOS one I just got is pretty good. I just looked it up while you were while we were talking. It is only N, right? It's not like an ACN, but it's dual band. It has like a guest network if you want to enable that.
There
it's kind of neat. It does have these capabilities. I mean, I think.
Are you back with Verizon?
Yeah. So we had done. You know, we were on FiOS for a long, long time.
This is a revelation. I had no idea you came back.
Oh no, we must have talked about this some months ago. Yeah. No, I'm on Verizon again, and it's the newer Verizon router, which is that kind of wedge shape one, the really thin one. It's nice. You know, it's definitely improved, but it's not. It's still. You know, it's you're almost never gonna get. You know, the same quality, the same technology, the same whatever that you're going to get from a third-party device.
What amazes me is that, you know, there are times like with the coverage of this router is really interesting because if I'm in the same room, I get almost half my speed. But if I leave and I go like across the hallway and up the stairs, it's perfect, you know, full speed internet. So I'm like, I don't know what this thing is doing. But,
I must have told you this, by the way. When we were in Ireland about a month ago, we went to this castle out in the middle of nowhere. And, of course, a lot of times when you're in the west of Ireland, the internet connection is really garbage. And so my phone said it had an E connection with like an edge connection, 2G. And, you walk up into the castle. I'm taking pictures of my phone and everything. And then I noticed at some point it said 3G, like on the second floor. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty good, you know. And I could actually like post something to Facebook from here. And then I walked up to the third floor and it said H, which is like HSPA, which is kind of 3.5G, like a little bit better than 3G. I'm like, oh, that's great. That's as good as I could expect. And then I walked outside and It said LTE. And like, I literally at every level of the castle, like my connection.
You went through every generation.
Yeah. No, like seriously, in one castle.
That's amazing.
I showed my kid. I was like, look at this phone. Like it's going up.
What's amazing is that in the subways now in New York, there's 4G access now. So
because they put in that. Yeah.
And it never existed. And now like I'm in the sub. It's so awesome because
because you used to go in the subway and it was like a dead zone.
Yeah. Now there's 4G. I mean, full bars. I'm getting better service in the subway than I do at my house. So that says something.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a homeless man urinating next to me, but at least I have all four
LTE
bars.
LTE makes a difference.
Yeah, it kind of makes the experience a little better.
I would take the urine if I could get good internet speed,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, don't get me started on how crappy the city is getting here. It's become an awful place at certain times of the day. So the Apple, since we're on this like home theater thing, you know, when watching Netflix and stuff like that, the rumors are heating up again, Paul. It's September, so it's time to talk about an Apple TV.
Do you think that's the big news for September?
You know what? I hope they don't release one.
Wow.
Now I'm just hoping we don't get an Apple TV.
No, you know what? This is where they're at. Apple TV is getting long in the tooth, as they say. I don't know where that phrase comes from, but it's sort of like the iPod Touch, right? Which, by the way, I tried to use. I keep talking about this trip for some reason, but I tried to use Apple Music on this iPod Touch, the previous gen now.
Yeah.
The one that was in market for like 3 years. And it is absolutely unusable. It is so slow. And I think, you know, if you look at the new Apple iPod Touch, they took away the little loop connector or whatever. They have some new colors. But basically, this is just the same exact device with a faster processor. And I bet, I'm not going to buy one, but I bet it makes all the difference in the world. And I think they need to do that with the Apple TV. At the very least, like, you don't have to change the hockey puck. You don't have to add a power button. You don't have to change the remote, although they might fix some of that stuff. Just make it, you know, more RAM, a little more storage, faster processor. Because I think as we start pumping more and more information through these devices, you know, it becomes the bottleneck. And, you know, Roku has done this. They've done a pretty good job about updating their hardware. Amazon, you know this, the Fire TV, those things are really fast. I may have issues around the user experience, but the device itself is really fast.
Yeah.
It makes a difference to make these kind of changes. So I know Apple has bigger designs on like a TV subscription service and blah, 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 whatever. But I mean, honestly, I think for now, just God, replace the damn puck.
You know what? I don't want them to replace it. Now I want it to stay the same. It's like, it's because all these years I've been hoping for one. And it is getting a little long in the tooth, like you said, and it's a little, you know, sluggish compared to other boxes. I'm a big fan of the Fire TV. I absolutely love this thing.
Yeah.
The things I have done so much to my Fire TV. I mean, the speed is unbelievable, but I've sideloaded Kodi on the thing. I put Chrome on there. I watch
because it's a Google.
Because it's Android. Yeah. So I'm running all these Android apps.
I have bought but not used much the Google Nexus Play device, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And I wonder how that's going to compare. I don't think it's out there yet. I probably put it away for the home swap. I got to get that going. But that is interesting for kind of the same reason. It's more of a pure Android type device. It's from Google. So assuming they don't just move on to the seventh generation attempt at getting Android TV to work, it might be around for a little while. It might be updated or whatever. But I do like the idea of this kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, I do too.
But I've got so much content on the Apple thing.
I'm obviously they're waiting for the deals with the big networks.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be the big selling point here.
But I think they're still going to announce it. I think they've waited so long that even though the content deals aren't in place, I think they're still going to do the hardware.
It's about time.
You know, just to have something in the market for Christmas or whatever.
So if we were to guess right now, right? If you were to take a guess, do you think they're going to open up the App Store for more than just, you know, the hand-picked applications that are on there
for
right
Apple
now?
For Apple TV, you mean?
Yeah, for Apple TV, yeah.
Yeah, I believe there's been evidence of this for a long time. I do think they're going to do that. I don't, you know, it's sort of like the Apple Watch. I don't think it's the next big thing. But I think when you're making apps for iOS, as so many people are, especially if they're entertainment apps or apps that would lend themselves to that kind of presentation on a TV, I it's so obvious. I mean, it's for the same reason that Microsoft needs to, sooner rather than later, open up the Xbox store. to app developers on Windows 10 or whatever, so they can do the same thing. I mean, it's not going to be as big as the primary platform, but it's such an obvious and wonderful thing to give developers, and it would be an obvious and wonderful thing for users of the platform as well, because you know their apps come over with them. I think I can't believe this hasn't happened.
Yeah, it's interesting to me how they've held on to this for this long. And obviously, if they thought,
do you
they
think
would
make it's tied to the content guys? I mean,
I don't
do you think
so.
There's...
No, I think it's them. You know, for Apple, they do certain things that it's for profit, right? The reason why they're doing things is so they can make money, and then they have like a podcast division that they make no money off of. But it's there; it's become their platform. That's the number one platform for podcasts. I think with devices like this for the Apple TV, the way that they probably see it is, are we going to sell more Apple TVs if we open this up? If we open up the App Store and we have to maintain the store, because they're not going to let every app through. It's not going to be like how it is for the phone.
Well, but they don't let every app through on the iPhone either. I mean, I realize there are a lot of apps, but I mean, it's not hard to say, look, this is very stringent. I mean, the majority of iOS apps are probably games, right? And if they want to put games on a TV, which, by the way, I think is a wonderful idea, those would have to be tailored to whatever the control will be. I mean, do you use like an iOS touch device? Are they going to have a hand controller of some kind like Amazon offers? I think Google offers.
I don't know either. I don't know what the right answer for this is. You know, the last couple of years, you and I are both really into this. And, you know, Tom Merritt and Brian Brushwood, they do a show called Court Killers. And it's all about, you know, set-top boxes and devices and television shows that are exclusive for online platform, which I, by the way, guys, if you are into that stuff, definitely check out the show because it's one of my favorite shows to listen to. Has the market matured beyond Apple TV, you know, needing to do a set-top box? You know, 3-4 years ago, not every TV was a smart TV. Now, most TVs are smart TVs. And the average person buying a TV is not saying, oh, my God, this thing has Netflix, but hell with this. I need to go get an Apple TV.
No, but you know
right
what? They're closing in on 1 billion users who have App Store iTunes accounts. They have their own content that needs to get onto a TV somehow, right? So there's always going to be a need for this. But they have this opportunity to lock people into their ecosystem, which they love to do, while providing them with additional value, which they also love to do, to be fair, and can work with content providers to get unique deals that I think they will do. And I think they're uniquely poised to kind of offer the ultimate cord-cutting solution. It's just that it hasn't come together yet. Apple has to be very careful since the ebook thing not to collude with other companies to hurt other companies, right? And this was never confirmed, but the EU apparently looked at their dealings with the music industry, fearing they were doing the same kind of stuff they did with ebooks. And apparently, this is not been confirmed, but apparently didn't find any bad behavior. So perhaps they've learned their lesson. One of the reasons this might be taking so long is they're trying to work within the rules for a change. But that just means we're going to get something that works well.
Yeah.
Whenever it happens.
It's fascinating to me. I mean, a lot of this is fascinating. September, October is going to be a very, very hot 2 months for hardware. I mean, we got the software releases, right? We got Windows 10 here. I got a great software update on my Samsung Galaxy S6. I got Android 5.1.1.
Wow.
And guess what, Paul? My battery no longer just dies overnight.
Like a 70 station wagon going up a hill.
Yeah. You could actually see.
You could actually watch
gasoline.
It in real time go down.
Yeah. I'm actually charging. This is insane how I'm charging this phone right now. I'm charging it with this backup battery because I don't have an outlet here. But I was getting overnight on standby. I was losing about 15%, 15-20%.
Wow.
Before this update, I got this update. I was at 41%, and in the morning I was at 38%. So that kind of makes sense, right? Just letting it sit there.
Yeah.
So they kind of fixed some of these issues. So that was my happy software update. But we got Windows 10. October, the next, I guess, wave for Windows 10 is coming out. Also, they're going to be announcing, Microsoft will be announcing a ton of hardware.
Yeah. So you're referring to this new report.
Yes.
I had heard about all of this stuff, and I think I've been talking about it.
You have.
I have this on... I mean, you know, again, things could have changed since I talked to this person, but I have this on the highest authority possible at Microsoft, that they were planning a September event for the phones in New York City, and that the Surface event would be separate from that, and that Band and Surface would be announced in October. And I don't know where. I mean, I think there was some talk about possibly Surface being at Redmond, but I don't know that for a fact. And so this week there's been a report from somewhere that this is all happening together at one event in October. And actually, that would be kind of cool. It'd be kind of nice not to have to travel to multiple events or whatever. So we'll see. But it just it contradicts what I had been told. So that tells me either it's wrong or things have changed. And so I'm trying to figure that out. But yeah, a lot of new stuff is coming.
A lot. So I don't know if you could talk about some of the hardware, but obviously the speculation is Surface Pro 4.
Yep.
The new flagship phone devices.
Yep.
For whatever that may be. And there was something else. Oh, the Band.
The
Microsoft Band 2. And was that it?
That's all I know about. And I think that was all. I think that was all that was mentioned in that report. Having one event, it would be smart for them because it would be kind of a big bang thing. Although I'll say on the flip side, if you do separate events, you get more news coverage, right? Because something like Band would get lost if it was announced alongside Surface Pro 4 and new Lumia phones. Sure. Although, by the way, the Band team may want to get lost. Because they've really been working on this kind of soft launch approach, and they may not want to go big bang. But
you know what's interesting, though? That they are going with a second band, and I'm curious about what they're going to change with that one, because the first one was pretty decent, but it wasn't, you know, you could tell that it was a first-gen device. With the Surface 4, though, I would imagine that they are going to change, you know, the kind of the look on this device, because it's looked the same for the last two generations.
Well, no. So Surface, for the Pro device, only been one gen. So Surface Pro 3 was a new device. Surface 3 is kind of visually styled like Surface Pro 3, but it's a non-Pro device. They made promises last October. No, actually, it might have been last August. So a year ago, where they said, look, we want businesses to roll this out. They're looking for a certain kind of consistency across generations because when they deploy hardware, they need to know this stuff's going to work. And they pledged at the time that all of the major peripherals for the Surface Pro 3, including the docking station, which conforms to the exact size and shape of Surface Pro 3, would be compatible with the next Pro device.
Yeah.
And that tells me that either the next Pro device will be identical from a form factor perspective, or hopefully not. They'll slip some kind of baloney slider in there so that it, you know, it can fit in the Surface
Pro 3. A baloney slider.
Well, not an actual bologna slider. You
know, I would love a bologna slider just slipped inside of the Surface.
I apologize for that word choice.
Yeah.
So my bet is that Surface Pro 4 will be identical form factor to Surface Pro 3. It will have updated chipset graphics and all that.
Yeah.
It will, and then you have to kind of speculate from there. So it's a Windows 10 device. So I believe and hope that it will have some form of like Windows Hello compatible something.
It would have to.
Camera, it has to, right?
It would have. I mean,
I assume they're going to improve the keyboards again, hopefully offer an actual hardware keyboard this time, finally. Hopefully they'll have two USB ports on it, although honestly I don't really expect that. But I think it's going to conform to what we see with Surface Pro 3. I think it's going to be the same basic deal.
I'm curious to see how it performs. I mean, this is going to be their... Well, it's interesting. This is going to be the flagship, I guess, model as to what to do with Windows 10 on hardware, right? That should be the device for them. This is the example that they need to set for everybody. So right. I'm curious on what extras they're putting into this one.
I mean, this is an opportunity for them to be on the leading edge of hardware, which they've not done. So each of the previous generation Surface Pro devices was kind of the previous gen Intel chipset at the time. And it's always been a little strange how they've done that. And so now we've got this new generation chipset finally coming out right now.
Skylark.
Sky Lake.
I don't know why. Skylark. Yeah, the Buick Skylark.
One of the more underrated small cars from the early 1980s. actually, one of my first cars was a Buick Skylark.
That's
but it
awesome.
Was a 76 Buick Skylark. Anyway, I think this is their opportunity to kind of push the boundaries of being on the leading edge a little bit, which is because they haven't been. So yeah. I think that that alone will be pretty cool. And they can, they'll talk percentages. You know, it's going to get X percentage better battery life. It's going to get X percentage better performance.
Yeah, because
X percentage better graphics.
Skylake itself, the graphics within Skylake, I saw this demo that they were doing. It's much better over the previous generation.
I mean,
supporting up to 3-4K monitors, and you know, it's a much beefier integration with the graphics on this thing.
They also got to do work on the thermal thing on Surface Pro 3 is very interesting, but in my experience, Surface Pro 3, the fan can blow very loud and very frequently, and hopefully the new chipset will kind of calm that effect down. Plus, I'm sure there'll be some more hardware rev on the design of the fans and the outtakes and all that stuff.
It's interesting. Battery life would be fascinating to see what they're going to be able to get with Windows 10, because this device is set up for Windows 10. Also,
this is one of those crash your finger moments, because this one's going to be right. If they come out the door with like 5-6 hours of battery life, it's going to be like, all right, well.
Well, the Sony Vaio, Vaio story was interesting too, because you know, they're known for making higher end laptops, and it was just too pricey and it didn't really catch on. But this may be something that's worth looking at, considering it's going to be part of the Signature series.
Yeah, so they're coming to the U.S. with just one device originally, although I guess laptops are coming in the future as well. It's super expensive, by the way. I don't know if you saw this. It's like $2,200.
Yeah.
But
what's the model? Do you have it? I'm looking at some of the older ones.
I do have. Yeah, I wrote a story about it on the Petri site. It's not on Throt.com. Yeah. It's a...
You go to Petri.com. I saw it on there. I couldn't because I was looking at just Sony Vaio prices to see if it's still insanely expensive. And it is still insanely expensive.
I mean, it's very expensive. It's a, what is this thing called? It's called a Canvas. It's a lot like a Surface Pro device. It has a pen. It has a hardware type keyboard, which I prefer, you know, instead of like a floppy kind of type cover kind of thing. Very, you know, but the company Vaio is targeting high-end professionals, you know, graphic artists, architects, you know, people that, you know, want quality, and they can make a good profit on these things and not have to kind of speak to that volume market that Sony was going after previously. And so we'll see, you know, we'll see if it takes off. But they're starting to expand out of Japan again, and that's kind of neat. And I am very eager to, I've asked, and I'll see if I can get a review copy of this thing. I'm not going to buy one of these. It's so expensive, but I am very interested in seeing what it's all about. It looks good.
$22.99 for the convertible tablet. Yeah. It's a convertible tablet. Yeah, it is expensive. A lot. I can't. You know, the next couple months is going to be pretty exciting, Paul. We're gonna shift our attention to hardware now. We spoke about software since God knows for how long, and now we're finally getting some hardware that we're very excited about. Also, you know, El Capitan is coming, so let's all prepare for this.
Well, Windows 10. You know.
Well, you know what I am. You know what I am hopeful for. The promise that it was 400 times faster.
Right. 410 new features.
Yeah, well,
feature one, this font in this size.
No. It was 400 times faster than the previous version. Sure. So
every time you see a claim like that, don't you wonder?
You know what? It's not a misquote. I'm telling you right now, this thing better be 400 times faster than the previous version.
400 times faster on the same hardware.
So,
will it work on a Core 2 Duo? That's all I need to know.
Yeah, can I run this on my 2008 Mac? Just my MacBook. Yeah. Will it work?
I actually put El Capitan on my MacBook Air.
And I heard about your update debacle. You played the update game for a couple hours.
And then I did it again. Oh no, I shouldn't say that. I didn't have to do it again. When I did it the second time, I wiped out the machine. It was funny. Apple does a really good job with PC restore stuff, and Microsoft could learn from this. But when you install newer versions of the OS, that becomes the restore partition, and so you can restore off of that. And that actually didn't work for me one time, in the sense that it wouldn't take my Apple ID, which I was typing in correctly. So I blew the whole thing away. It went back to Mavericks, and then I had to update from that to Yosemite. And then from Yosemite to El Capitan. And when I did that, I went right to Beta 7, so I didn't have to do all the installs.
And El Capitan is a good operating system.
Yeah, actually, I was going to say, I don't use the Mac a lot, but I will say visually, there's actually a very big change when you go from Mavericks to Yosemite. And when you go from Yosemite to El Capitan, there isn't a big visual change. But the big change is actually from Mavericks, which to me sounds like a very recent new version of Mac OS X.
Yeah.
It's not that old, right? It's only
Mavericks
like
a year
and a half, two years.
No, a year. Every year.
Well, Yosemite's a year, right? I mean,
yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, Yosemite's a year. Yes. Mavericks is 2 years. Yeah. I am very excited for this. I'm very excited for the new font. It is time for me to get a new laptop, and I think my next laptop is not going to be a Mac, unfortunately.
Wow.
I'm going to go with a Windows-based laptop.
Sony Z Kansas?
I'm going to go with the Kansas and the Intel Skylark.
The Intel Skylark.
How much to get the Kansas edition on my Intel Skylark? It's like the special leather package. It's like the Eddie Bauer edition
get on the Ford Explorer.
All right, guys. That's it for this week. Guys, this is what we're going to do. If you're watching live, stay tuned. What the Talk is coming up. What is What the Talk? Well, What the Talk is our bonus show. We record it live each and every week following the show exclusively for patreon.com/whatthetech. You can donate anything you want, $1, $2, a penny, 2 pennies, whatever it is we take. Helps us keep on doing this. It's going to pay for this live stream. I'll tell you that thing is going to be a little pricey, but I think it's worth it. I think you guys deserve an ad-free live stream, and we're going to be providing that. So things like that go to the extras that we're going to be offering. Also, if you're buying anything on Amazon, you could use my link. It's gfq.co/Amazon. Bookmark it, save it. And whenever you go to Amazon, click on that, and I get a tiny little credit from every time you make a purchase. A couple percent here and there, and it goes a long way. You can follow Paul on Twitter, at The Rot. You can follow me, at Andrew Zarian. Paul also does another podcast called Windows Weekly on Wednesdays at 2 p.m. East on the Twit Network with Mary Jo Foley and Leo Laporte. Phenomenal show, great show, one of my favorites of all time. You are one of my favorites of all time, Paul.
Thanks, man.
All time. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye for now.